Right, so today I'm with racecourse dog racing bookmaker Roger Barton. Thanks very much for agreeing to talk to us, Roger. And we're at Romford today.
How do you do, Simon?
I'm very well, thank you. This is pretty easy for you because you've done a fair bit of media stuff before. You've been on the telly, you've been
on
the radio.
Once or twice.
So you can.
They couldn't find anybody else.
I'm not sure if that's not it. Now then, I've been doing a bit of research. You said in 2007, if my research is right, that Betfair and internet bookies would finish you off. 12 years later, you're still here. Do you still think that's going to be?
Well, one thing is for certain, Simon. It hasn't done us any good. Our turnover has dropped radically, and a lot of people bet online. They don't come to the dogs now. You know, years ago, when my father bet, he bet at Clapton, Hackney Wick and places like that. When he bet at Clapton during the war, there was 276 bookmakers. There was up to 30,000 people used to go to the dogs on a Friday or a Saturday night. Vast, vast amounts of people. Now, here at Romford, we're restricted because we had a health problem some time ago and fire. But now, all they're allowed here, because of the restriction, is 100 in the restaurant and maybe 200 in the pavilion and out where the bookmakers are. So we are very restricted how much money we take. But even so, when it's all done, and before we had problems, our turnover was going down weekly. You can say, oh, well, it's not what it used to be. Well, it is, and it's still a great, great sport, and people can come and have a wonderful evening. But because people can bet online, they can bet on Bet365, there's so many betting shops, they can have a bet and take the early prizes. As an on-course bookmaker, our trade is terrible to what it used to be. And also, if you have a look, how many dog tracks there used to be. There used to be West Ham, there used to be Clapton, there used to be Hackney Wick. I could go on and on and on and on. They've all gone. Walthamstow, the finest dog track in the country. Nobody ever thought it would close. It was the track. Where is it now? Sold for housing. And I can, as I say, go on and tell you more, which is, it's so such a shame people don't go. Why don't they go? One of the reasons why they don't go, because they can sit in their front room and they can bet online and they can have what they like. They can have a beer, they can have a cigarette. They don't have to come to the dogs. But they miss so much not coming to dogs. The excitement. There's nothing better when you're cheering your dog home and it's too clear. Go on, my son. Go on, my son. But you can hear it. It's a great atmosphere. It's a great feeling for the punters. And obviously now and again, the bookmakers very quietly, they're not allowed to cheer their winners home. But if they've got in front that wins a few quid, then inwardly they are cheering him home. Go on, my son. Right. So it is. It's great.
Now, Romford are investing. They've torn the old stand down, they're building a new one, so it looks like Romford's here to stay. Now, all the punters that used to give you a hard time, do they still come, proper dog punters?
Well, that's the $64,000 question. Romford Coral Stadium are investing millions, which is fantastic. Not just for me, but also the greyhound game, trainers, owners. You know, we want this to live on. It's great. I think that they'll keep investing. Whether we'll get our old customers back remains to be seen. There's got to be a tremendous amount of advertising, getting people here. I personally think we will get 90% of our punters back. But what we've got to do, we've got to somehow, get people that haven't been dog racing, new people, something new to the game. That's what we've got to get, and I think we need advertising excessively, but I think it's there. I mean, there's not another dog track. You'll have to go to the other side of the water now to Greatford, but this side of the water is hardly a dog track, you know, for people to go. And when they've done it all, the amenities will be second to none. So I do, in my heart, and I really hope that they will come back, and I think they will.
Are there any punters that you wish didn't come?
Very good question. Yes, there are punters you find very difficult to beat. They're mostly watching Betfair. They watch the moves, and they wait. Punters of years ago would come in, and there was only eight races then. They'd come in and they would have a bet in every eight races. Some of these blighters, they might only come once, or, you know, they might only come for one bet or two bets. If there's a movement in the market, they'll want to be on when it's just coming off the board. Oh, I'm sorry, am I too late? No, but they are very few and far between now.
Is there any that you just say, look, I don't want your business?
No, no, and I've got one too. I've got a very good client, and he had a 4203 about 2 or 3 months ago. Good bet to lay, and lo and behold, it won. And I said to him, his name's Jordan, nice chap, and I said to him, Jordan, we don't want too many of them, Jordan. I'm here supposed to win. With that, he gave me a bit of abuse, and he actually had to get 5,100 on the night. It doesn't always happen, but it does happen.
I think I know Jordan, a young fella. We interviewed him previously with a surname with a V.
Yes.
Yes.
That's right, it, yes.
We'll put his link to his up. Who's the best punter that you have ever known, i.e. best as in beat you on a regular basis? Historically,
called,
it could be.
Yeah. Yeah. The fella called Grant. He still comes. I don't lay him. He's too good for me. But... he's very, very good. He studies, he works hard at it. And at one time, when he could, I'm going back 2 or 3 years, he would have thousands on. He would go along the line to all the bookmakers, 3,001, 3,001, 3,001, 3,001. And when I added my books up at the end of the year, I'm afraid to say, I was on the losing side. So I had to give in, you know, I say, Grant, you're too good for me. There's nothing wrong in that. That's good, and you have to. If you've got a punter, whether he's getting information or whether he's just an exceptional judge, I'm not there to lose. I've got to pay the staff, and I've also got a family to feed.
Did you come with an opinion?
Yes. Not as much as I used to, because when there was no Betfair, all you had was the Racing Post, and you could then... You know, your opinion would differ from these people. Unfortunately now, when you see a move, even if you think the dog can't win, you know, as an opinionated bookmaker, you think, well, that can't win. Them days are gone.
Yeah.
Money talks all languages.
Now, you talk about money talks. You've been a very successful man.
I wouldn't exactly say that, but...
Well, you've been successful. You were the king of Billingsgate, and you're also a very successful bookmaker, I'm reliably informed. You know, which one did you make the most money in?
Very good question. Sorry, that's a very good question. The fish market, you win every week. Bookmaking, you don't win every week. You will have your very good weeks, and you will have some very bad weeks.
And what do you think, what is your strong personality, something that's helped you get on in both of those businesses?
Yes, I definitely think being a bookmaker and also being a fish merchant, you have to have some kind of personality. People are looking for somebody with something. I've got up 5-2, the bookmaker's got up 5-2 next to me. I've got to lay my 5-2 before he lays his. So consequently, you have got a personality. I'll tell you just a very quick thing that happened one day in the fish market. It was 2 o'clock in the morning and I had a chap called Ronnie working for me. Very, very nice chap. And he was singing away at 2 o'clock in the morning. And there was a chap called David Lucy, who also owned the stand. And as he walked by, I said to him, David, you see how happy the staff are? And he said, so was the galley slaves. Just like that, he never broke his stride and he kept going. And in both sectors, in bookmaking and the fish business, you always get people who are quick-witted, they love banter, you know, and it's lovely. And if you've got any character, it will bring it out in you. You know, I used to have a Spanish fella come in and he had a lovely Spanish restaurant in the West End. And he used to come and he'd say, hey, Crook, what's going on, Crook? And that's the way it would greet me. There was nothing personal in it, but you know, you have them things in the fish market. You know, you play cricket together, you play football together, so you become comrades. And in betting, in you know, bookmakers together, 9 times out of 10 you do, you become comrades.
Now, you say you don't always win at the dogs. What was your worst losing day you can remember? Done figures?
Yes, figures, my worst losing day, I think we done 11 grand.
Right, well that brings me nicely on to the next question. You got fined 10 grand by Billingsgate, or something to do with Billingsgate. What hurt the most?
Billingsgate. Because I knew here I could get it back. At Billingsgate I couldn't.
So what was, how did you do the 11 grand then? What was it?
I had a fella, he had all his dogs were named after Diesel. It was Diesel, he actually named a dog after me, Diesel Barton. And they told me, they said, now be careful, I'll never forget, it was in Trap 2, in a 575 at Romford. So they said, now be careful, he's been playing with this dog, he's got it right. So I don't know, I didn't listen, like most young people don't. Went 9-2, and then he came and he said, what would you like to lay? I said, a 4,500 to 1, how's that? He said, yes, lovely. So then I put up 7-2, and he said, how much would you like to lay? So I said, 3,500 to 1. He said, lovely. I put up 5-2. He said, now, we've been messing about. How much would you like to lay? So I said, you can have a 5,000 to 2, and that's the end of it. No fucking more. Needless to say, the dog Ronto. He walked by the stand. He said, don't worry about paying me now. Drop it in the morning. And obviously, he wasn't the only person that backed it. And everybody in the track knew about it except me. But there you are. That's life. It did hurt, but tomorrow's another day.
Right, we talked about your character. I've only just met you today, but I can tell that you're a very buoyant sort of person. I've met people previously that used to scare me to death, and then when I met them like this, they're actually really nice and really sort of quite polite. Is, as we see you now, is this as you are, or is some of it a bit of
this is exactly as I will be on the stall tonight. When there's people there, I say, right, come on, you're after mine and I'm after yours. So stop fucking about and let's get to it. And that's exactly what I do. That's my business. I'm selling myself and I'm selling the business. I've got to take money. That's the name of the game. You've got to take it well, but that's what I'm there for.
Okay, Roger, one of the things I found out when I was Googling you, in 1982, you had a few shotguns that you shouldn't have had.
That's quite correct.
And you ended up doing a bit of...
I did. I've done 3 years in prison. What can I say? I was young. I was a go-getter. When you mention shotguns, people might go, my God, he was a bandit, he was a terrorist. No, I wasn't. I lived on a farm, and we used to do a lot of shooting. And most of these guns, if people know anything about guns, they were Purdy's, they were IBA's, they were absolute the tip-top of guns. There was a gun, I forget the name, but they were lovely, they were magnificent. They were stolen in a place in Hertfordshire, and most of them come to me and one or two other shooters. Obviously I regret for what I did. We all make mistakes in life. I'd like to think I've left them days behind and gone and become a good taxpaying citizen, and I have. You know, you do things in life. Whoever you are, sometimes you get away with them scot-free, and other times it costs 3 years of your life. That's a long time. How much is a day of your life worth? £10, £100, £1 million? I don't know. I wasn't with my children. I wasn't with my wife. And a lot of people look at the camera and say, well, you deserved it. Well, maybe I did. But I've done my time. I've come out. I've never been in trouble since. And I hope that, you know, that other people, what I'd like to say to anybody, don't go down that road. It's the wrong road. It's tough at times, I know, for everybody. Don't do it. Get out the next day, wipe yourself down, and try to get some kind of employment, you know, that's honest, and you will eventually get there. And don't challenge life, keep going, be strong. You know, never give in, and certainly don't go down the wrong road.
Well, I'd imagine somebody with a gregarious character like you would have found captivity pretty tricky.
Good evening, old chap. We're betting in here. Will you tell the other bookmakers? Lovely.
How did you cope with that?
First of all, I think for every person that's gone to prison for the first time, he doesn't know for one second what the hell's going on. After a month, you realise that this is your life for the next year, 2 years, 3 years, 10 years, and boy, you've got to get under, you've got to knuckle down, and you've got to do it. And do it, do your bird. You've got it, do it. And it will be a lot easier if you realise that you've made a mistake. So get on and do it, and it's not easy. It's not easy, of course it's not. And there's nights you cry yourself to sleep. I've got to tell you that. But don't, you know, and the only thing I can say, I was the only one who was guilty. Everybody in there was innocent.
Did you think you come out a stronger person for it?
Yes, I do believe I come out a stronger person for it. And a better person. I mean, everywhere you go in life, if you're stuck on the desert island, there's things you can learn, and you learn in prison. Don't go listen to them, you know, what people say. Sometimes people learn more about doing things they shouldn't. Don't. Think about your family. Think about you've made a mistake. We all make mistakes. So, you know, do it. Do it with a bit of spirit if you can. Don't lose your identity. You know, and be the man. And look, you made a mistake. You'll pay for it. Okay. Don't do it again.
Right, so the betting ring, prison, or Billingsgate, which is the most hostile environment?
Very good question, Simon. Obviously, in prison it can be hostile, but Billingsgate can be hostile. I had many a good fight in Billingsgate, and also being at the bookmakers. I've seen the joints go over where unsatisfied customers have knocked the joint over. I've been knocked to the floor. But people do things sometimes they wish they hadn't. We're all human beings, we've got feelings. Sometimes we laugh, sometimes we cry. But that's life, it's full of ups and downs. Stay on the straight and narrow, it will be tough. You know, many a times I've said to myself, when something's gone wrong, you say to yourself, why did it happen to me? Why didn't it happen to him? Why didn't it happen to him? But it did happen to him, and it did happen to him. We all have good days, we all have bad days. So, come on, you've got to, the next morning, tomorrow's another day, get up, brush yourself down, say, right, today's the day. I'm going to do them today, by God I will. If you've got that attitude to life, whatever you're in, whatever you do, you will be successful. But you've got to be prepared to, you know, work hard, you know, and keep cracking away. That's what we do. If you're born with a silver teaspoon, then you're a very lucky man. If you're born like I was, to an ordinary father, an ordinary mother, then it's up to you. Come on, let's see how good you are. You think you're good, but how good are you?
Right, now when I was looking you up, one side of people said you was the king of Billingsgate, and the other side of it said you was the bastard of Billingsgate. Which one was it?
Well, that's a very good question, and it all depends which side of the fence you're on. I was a porter in Billingsgate for 20 odd years. I was the secretary of the union. I got the porters of Billingsgate good rises and good working, and it was great. And I loved them. They were my brothers. We were union men together. I then, it's like the gamekeeper turning, you know, poacher. And I become a tenant. Now you see both sides of the coin. And the porters eventually lost their licenses. They were bought out. They got £25,000 each, and a lot of them were employed the very next day. Some of them didn't. I had five porters, and I didn't employ them. I think the five of them got work elsewhere. Times have to change. Unions are great things. But like the docks, the papers, sometimes they get too strong. They don't listen, and you can't have the towel wagging the dog's head. So some of the porters might say he's the bastard of the Billingsgate. But some of the porters who I knew well, I mean, you know, understood where I was coming from. I actually lost a son. You might say, what do you mean you lost a son? I brought up a boy from 11 years of age. His father had died. I took him to Billingsgate, became a porter. Lovely boy, but he never spoke to me. We speak on a very rare occasion. So, I didn't lose, I lost, you know. Being a tenant at Billingsgate, we got the tenants together and everybody worked for each other, which was great. The atmosphere was great and Billingsgate was strong. And in them days, all you saw literally was Englishmen and Jewish chaps, and it was a great market. I don't go there so much as I used to, but it's changed in many ways, but that would have to be another story.
Right now, Ditchling Beacon.
Ditchfield Beacon.
Ditchfield Beacon, sorry. Tell
Ditchfield
us about that.
Ditchfield Beacon. Bloody hell, you sure found someone. Ditchfield Beacon is a ride from London to Brighton. And Ditchfield Beacon is the last hill, and it's one in five or one in seven before you go down the other side into Brighton. And there's very few people, good cyclists as well, that ever make it. Now, I've done that ride three times, and I only got up Ditchfield Beacon once, but it was well worth it. It's one of the things I can really remember in my life that I was so happy I accomplished it. And I would suggest anybody who cycles, and this includes you, Si, is to do that run. It's so challenging, but it's fantastic.
Do you still ride now?
Yes, I still ride to this day. I love it. There's nothing better than riding a bike. You smell, you see, you hear. I advise anybody, get a bike. You haven't got to do 90 miles an hour. Go out. The things you see. I saw a little while ago, and this is the truth, I saw a llama, I saw a goat, and I saw a deer. All eating together in literally in the same area. You don't see that. If you're in a car, you've gone by. So, and it's great. It keeps you healthy. It keeps you fit. You know, and as you get older in life, you're not as fit as you used to be. So get out there. You'll love it.
Now, I also saw that you said that go to Billingsgate every day and bookmaking kept your mind active, kept you sharp. And you're obviously still active and sharp, but you only come racing now twice a week. So what do you do to keep that going for the rest of the time?
Well, I've got a decent sized garden and I enjoy gardening. I think that's great. That's another thing to keep you healthy. And growing your own veg and things like that, it's really, when you put it on the plate, it's great. It really is, to eat your own carrots, to eat your own broccoli and things like that. It won't always work out, but it's great fun. I cycle, I walk, I swim. I'm on a river called the Wensum, which goes actually into Norfolk. But you can swim there, there's otters there. It's lovely, and the birds are fantastic. So, once again, although you're not maybe making a book or you're in Billingsgate, you're still learning, about life and different aspects of it. It is a different aspect, you know, herring gulls and things like that, buzzards. It's fantastic to watch it. The kingfisher is a blue flash and he's gone in a second. But once again, it keeps your mind occupied. You think, what was that? Yes, it was a kingfisher. Great, well worth going. And I watch fishermen, and I watch them how they hook their line up and how they cast and what they're looking for. Yeah, very good.
So we talked about your life, obviously very briefly in the time that we've had. Anything you'd change about it if you could go back?
When I was born, my parents were very Victorian. I never went out with my father and had a beer. It wasn't done in them days. But I wish I had. I wish I was more close to my father than I was. But in them days, fathers and sons didn't hug. You know, it wasn't done. I wish we could have turned the clock back a little bit forward where we did hug. And I did tell him that I thought the world of him.
Finally, three rules for life. People that are watching this.
Three rules for life. Never ever at any time do you strike your children or your wife. Remember that, gentlemen. And women can be awkward, I know. You never strike them. Secondly, keep to the honest path. I've tried the other way. It's no good. It's no good. Take good advice. You'll lose some of your life, and it's a short way. It's a short route. Don't do it. Be honest. You can do a day's work. You can roll up your sleeves, and you can do it. Remember, gentlemen, we never won two world wars running away. So that's what I advise. That's one and two. And three, try to be happy. Try to laugh. Try to play with your kids, your grandchildren. Try to be happy. We get old before we know it. Enjoy yourself. Have some laughs. Go over the park with the kids. Do swimming. All that kind of thing. You know, work hard, yes, but have your pleasure times as well. Especially with the old woman. Because they look after us. They feed us. They look after us. You know, you can have, you know, have one wife. That's enough.
Brilliant. Roger Barton, thank you very much.
The honour's mine. Simon, God bless you. I hope it all works out well.
Thank you.
Good evening. Let me introduce you to Karen McMillan. She is the manageress at Romford Dog Stadium. And she sees over the bookmakers, over all the staff, and many other problems that she might get. Tonight, she's going to tell me about a system that we now have to bring in because of young people who sometimes try to have a bet and are under the age of having a bet. Now, this has been going on some time, but it's now come to light because people are spending money gambling that they really shouldn't be. So, right, Karen, would you like to tell me?
Yeah, I mean, the Gambling Act goes back to 2005, so it's not actually a new thing.
No.
In the retail side of the business, we operate a Think 21 policy. Right. So anybody that looks the age of 21 or younger, we have to ask for identification to ensure that they're of age to come into a betting shop.
Right.
The policy's been here for a number of years as well. And recently, we've just introduced the Think 25 policy.
Which means what?
Which means that any young stranger that looks the age of 25 or younger, we will ask for identification to ensure that they're above the age of 18. And also it would mean then that they can have a bet or they can drink alcohol on our establishment.
Okay.
This goes with the bookmakers, the tote team, the bars.
It's throughout.
It's throughout the whole stadium. But obviously on the retail side, it's for gambling, because you're not allowed alcohol in the shops.
No.
It's even more important for us, because obviously we have families come here, so we've got to look after the vulnerable, which classes as anybody, children, anybody that's had a drink,
yep.
Or under the influence of alcohol. We wouldn't want them to put them in a situation where they're betting and they shouldn't be.
Right.
So we have a third party company that will come in. And they will come over and they'll ask you if they could have a bet, and if they look like a young stranger, we're obliged to ask for identification.
So right, let's go through the procedure. I'm on the stand,
yep.
The prices are up, you look obviously under 25. Do I have to say to the punter, i.e. whether it's a young lady or a young man, are you over 18, are you over 25, or which do I have to ask?
So what you would ask them was if they had any identification on them.
Right.
So anybody that's a young stranger to yourself,
right.
We would ask for identification.
So that's the first thing I say.
Yeah.
Excuse me, have you got identification?
Yeah.
If they say why...
Say because you look young, which is a compliment to most of us these days.
Yep.
And we would ask them to produce identification. Failure to do this,
yep.
And it's a really, really simple rule. No identification,
there's
no bet.
Right.
It's very simple. It's not only protecting ourselves, it's actually protecting the young and the vulnerable. We wouldn't want anybody...
I totally agree with it. Yeah. I think it's a very good thing.
Yeah.
Now, if I do say to them, are you under 20, over 18 or over 25 years of age,
Do I have to take any notes or write their name down or anything like that?
Nope. So I've given all the bookmakers now, including the tote staff and the bar staff. We have a log throughout the establishment of the stadium, and that will be logged. And that also, that protects yourself. It protects.
So we have to log it?
Yes.
So, okay. So you're 18, obviously. I can see that. So you come in and ask me for a bet, and I say, my first words are, have you any identification, young lady? And you say yes, so you bring out your identification, yes, and I can see you're 22.
Yes.
So now she's entitled to have a bet.
Yes.
Of which, do I then, if she has the bet, do I still have to write her name down and...
You log the details.
You log it. Yes. So, okay, Mary Lou, age 18, and that's sufficient as long as I've seen her identification.
Yes, that's correct.
That's what
correct.
I have to do.
Yeah.
So the first question out of my mouth is not who you want to back.
No.
Is, good evening, identification please.
Yes, that's correct.
Now, not everybody's going to, especially young bucks, you know, they want to look macho. And if you say to some young chaps, excuse me, are you 25? They sometimes come very close to you. As if you're being rude or insulted, which we're not.
Yeah. Well, if anybody asks anybody under the age of 25 and they're over, have you got any identification? Most people will see it as a compliment.
Yes.
And I found 25 years in the business, I found that the only customers that actually get a little bit irate are the ones that haven't got identification and are usually underage.
Right.
And at that point, we wouldn't accept a bet off them or serve them alcohol.
Okay, now you're under 18, we say. You want a tenner on the six dog.
Yes.
But I say, I'm sorry, you've got no identification or you're too young. Mm. If you go to my friend here, Simon, and give him the £10 note to have it on the six dog, I think Simon is over 18 years of age. Can I then accept the bet through him?
No.
I can't?
No.
I can't?
No.
Well, I never realised that.
You need to see the identification for yourself.
Yes, and once she's not old enough, if she goes to her dad, we'll say.
Yeah.
Say Simon's the dad and says, Dad, put me a tenner on the six dog.
The answer is no.
I can't.
So if we saw someone going up to a customer over the age and they came up to the bet, we have come up to the counter to have a bet, we would actually turn around and say, no, unfortunately, we can't stick that bet. It's exactly the same if you went into a supermarket and you were buying someone alcohol for an underage customer,
right.
They wouldn't accept it there. We wouldn't accept it at the bar either.
I see.
And this is not a Ladbrokes Coral policy.
No. This is the law of the land.
This is the law. And it's through every bookmaker, through every public house in the country. And the answer is, we do not want to serve anybody that's under the age.
I see.
And we would not want to encourage it. So putting this in place, it not only protects us, but it also protects the vulnerable.
Very good.
We wouldn't want them to.
Simon, let me bring you in here. Good evening. Did you realise that if, say, somebody next to you wasn't 18 years of age, you were at the races or Romford or wherever, and they said, do me a favour, old chap, put me a tenner on the six dog. First of all, now I would imagine you must be committing some kind of offence, but I can't take that for you. Now, in the past, I can honestly say this in truth, people have come down for a bet when we round the other side and said, oh, can I have a bet? And I've looked at him and thought, well, this chap looks a bit sus. I think he's under 18. And I've said, have you identification? And they've said no. And I said, no, then I can't bet you. I've seen them gone away in the crowd and I've seen a chap with somebody and they've come down, an elder person, and had a tenner, and I've laid them. So I shouldn't have done that.
If you believe that bet was for someone under the age of 18 years old, you should not accept that bet.
Yeah, but how can I prove, Karen, that the guy might say, it's not his bet, it's my bet?
Okay, that you can't prove.
No.
But if you believe, and it is about the belief, if you believe that is for a customer that's under the age of 18, you should not accept that bet.
Right. Now, another thing is, there's a minute to go.
Yes.
Right? They're all gathering around the odd. They all want to have a bet. And somebody there... Up comes Simon. Now, I think he looks about 17, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I say to him, Simon, identification, please.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, give me a ten on the top, mate. Give me 50p. This is all happening very quickly. You know, you realise. Now, all of a sudden, a fella wants £100 on the three dog. Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to see Simon's identification. Too late. He doesn't get on the chat, wants to be on the three dog, but he's £100. Up goes the trap, out goes three, and it wins. Now we've got a slight problem because the geezer says, oh, I want you to make the freedom. You've let me down, you know.
It's no different to in a betting shop when you've got 50, 100 people in a betting shop. The point is, if you take a bet off the first person, like you're saying, Simon, under the age of 18, you're breaking the law.
Right.
So the answer is no, you would not take that bet. So if you chose, while Simon was looking for his identification, to take someone else's bet who you believe was over the age, that's entirely up to you.
Yes.
But the minute you take a bet from an underage, it's a child.
We're in trouble.
You're in trouble.
That is the last possible thing. I understand. Okay. One of the things I think the bookmakers could do in these circumstances, say, you know, we have to put the prices up with 8 minutes to go. Right. Say we put the prices up and there's a lot of youngsters there. Mm-hmm. Would it be advised for me to say, fellas, the law's changed slightly?
It hasn't changed. The law's been exactly the same.
Okay, we're upholding the law a lot more now because we have to. If you guys want to have a bet, some of you don't look 18 or you might look under 25. I would suggest now you have the bet with 8 minutes to go. That way I can see your identification.
Correct.
And if you all come up, that's the best thing. So I don't think it'd do any harm to say to some of these people, guys, don't wait to the last. If you want a bet, I can guarantee you'll have your bet.
Correct.
Providing you've got, I think that's
exactly
the thing.
Exactly the same. But the thing is that things haven't changed recently here. This should have been happening all along. It is the law.
Well, I won't say it wasn't, but let's say we didn't know too much about it. There wasn't much upheld.
Well, now you've got me. You're going to know all
Karen,
about it.
Karen, listen. We now know, before anybody who's young comes in, we say to them straight away, have you got identification,
any
please?
Young stranger.
Yeah, comes in with identification. And if they're 18 or over, we can lay them in the bet.
Yes.
But they've got to be 18 or over.
Yes.
Lovely. Right. Now, is there anything else you want to tell me?
No, but you're wonderful.
I wouldn't say that, but...
Have we cleared that up?
We have.
Fantastic.
And I know now, and you've obviously told all the other bookmakers, but tonight when I go out there, I should get in front and say, now, you know the laws, fellas.
Yep.
Don't come to me, you know, in a week's time and say, oh, we didn't ask this young lady. You have to challenge everybody.
Everybody.
Yes.
Everybody.
That's great, Karen. That's nice and clear.
And I'm going to make your evening because I'm going to have you inside tonight and not out in the rain.
Oh, we're in here?
Shall we bring you in tonight?
I'm not worried, to be honest. Mr. Simmons is not here. He's a bit adverse to the rain. But it's a poor night. How many have we sold tonight?
I'd have to check with reception.
Well,
I'm not quite sure. We have enough room for you to stay in tonight.
Have we?
Yes. So if you'd like to stay in tonight, let's keep you quiet tonight.
Okay,
yeah?
That's lovely, Karen, and I appreciate that. Lovely. And if there's any questions, I'll come and ask you.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to get in trouble.
That's right.
We want to see Romford, the best track in the country.
Oh, it will be.
Whether it's the girls serving the teas or the ladies serving the beer.
Yeah.
Even them bloody old bookmakers.
But not only do we serve the best tea, the best pint. So,
yes.
And going forward, we will be the best.
Right, lady. Lovely. It's lovely to talk to you.
And you. Thank you very much.
Simon, would you like to ask this young lady, is there anything you'd like to ask her? No? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Lovely.
Thank you.
And I'll ask all the chaps to behave.
Yeah.
I think they will. Well, it's their livelihood at stake.
That's what we want. We want to make sure we protect ourselves.
Yes.
But also, we want to protect the young and the vulnerable as well.
Yep, I couldn't agree more.
I don't know if you've got children or grandchildren.
I have both.
I've got young children. I certainly
would not want them.
Oh, God. Mine are old now. But I wouldn't want them to go into anywhere and be able to have a bet without being challenged.
No, I totally agree. We will do everything we possibly can. And I sincerely mean this.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the bookmakers, they're all good bookmakers.
Yeah.
So I'll make sure that if I see somebody coming up to anybody else's joint and they don't look of age, I'll just say, have you asked them?
Yeah, that's
lovely. What
it's all
about. We can help each other. Right, way, isn't it, Si?
Supporting each other.
Lovely.
Lovely, thank
you. Do you want a vodka or a scotch?
Oh, God, no.
Star Sports TV, our weekly magazine TV programme packed with tips, news and banter on the key sports events of the week. Check out the latest episode at starsportsbet.co.uk. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.